That's all. So what we're here today is to talk about the collections module itself. So you've all been through it, and then hopefully, yeah, well, certainly, unless you lied in the second assignment, you know, there's some good stuff in it, isn't there?
Yeah.
And I think it's about doing it is what it's all about. And, you know, the areas of stress and stuff, like, I see it so often. You know, you just have to, you know, just my three or four words, which is the title of a book I'm writing for a long time. It's called Cool, Calm, and Collect It. Okay, not collected, collect it. And that's really, look, that's the trick to collections as far as I'm concerned. You know, you're clear in terms of what you want to achieve. You don't deviate from that. And in terms of letting people upset you, it's none of their business. Is that okay? So in order for somebody to upset you or ruin your day, you have to give them permission. And I hope that as a result of what you've learned, permission denied. Nobody has the right to ruin my day, and they ain't going to do it. Did I tell you the story about the lad with 34,600 euros?
Yeah.
I told you that, did I? Yeah, because it's still, I'm not sure if I told everybody. I'll remind you, I'll tell you again. Here is a question that I saw, which I thought was brilliant. And the question is, if you had 36,400 euros in your bank, and somebody took a tenner on you, would you get so upset with them taking the tenner that you would throw the other 36,390 quid at them?
No.
It's stupid, isn't it? It's a stupid concept, and nobody in the world will be that stupid. By coincidence, you have 36,400 minutes in a day. So if somebody upsets you for 10 of them, why give them their whole day? It's 10 out of 36,400. Let it go. So in terms of stress levels, come on, let's not let that get to us. So anyway, the layout of the mock exam, and I know you had some talk with Paul about mock exams. Everybody did get the collections mock exam.
Oh yeah, the collections.
That's all right. That's all right. Yeah. So that's fair enough. And the way that looks is exactly the way the real exam is going to look. Is that okay? So there's 8, no trick questions, no part A's and B's and complicated stuff. It is just 8 straight questions. Oh God, no! No, that'll take the fun out of it. I don't think. No, they are not. They are similar, though. Is that okay?
Yeah.
They are similar, and can I tell you in absolute? Yes, I can tell you with absolute confidence that if it's on the mock paper, it will not be on the exam.
If it's on the mock, it won't be.
It will not be on the exam. Now, having said that, I did say it's similar. So if we look at question 5, which says, sorry, am I right? This is the mock, yeah. So mock, yeah. So work this out, Einstein. Now this is very important that you get this right. So if the question is on the mock, will not be on the exam, and the exam is going to be similar. Any idea what the question on the exam paper?
Okay.
It might be can't or shouldn't.
Can't, yeah, so it'll be from the same module.
Exactly, so same module. And the paper is divided in such a way that the 8 questions will be 2 from each module.
Yeah.
Is that okay? So that's the way it's going to work. So again, to focus your attention on, you might decide, look, that whole stuff on data protection, I love it. There'll be a question on it, or I hate that, so I'm not going to do that. So there'll be 2 questions from each module. And again, as you know, you only have to answer 4 of the 8.
Yeah.
So, and there'll be the same style of questions in terms of they'll be generic or whatever. So that's that. And in terms of explain the role of a collector, which is the first question on the mock paper. So the first couple of pages, there's 10 points on what the role of a collector is. And you get 2 marks for each one that you get. But explain means that you go through the various roles or whatever. But look, is there any questions? The negative words and all that kind of stuff. Everything that's on the papers is in the notes. Okay, so that's that. Just that you know as well. Writing a collection letter, Noel, you won't. You see, if it's in there, you won't have to do that, which is fair enough. So I suppose what you want to know in the next 50 minutes is, where do I focus my attention for the exam?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Did anybody time themselves or do the mock exam? It's no harm. And what I would advise you to do, even over the next week or two, is to go home some evening, or even stay in the office if they let you, sit down with a notepad and a pen, pick your 4 questions and write your answers without the notes. Just create an exam environment for yourself. And once you've been there, done that, doing it the second time would be a dollar. Is that okay? So just even to get your timings right in half an hour, just even to get your head to work. So if you say, okay, look, from 7:30 to 9:30, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to turn off all electronic devices, I'm going to sit down for 2 hours and I'm going to just see if I can do this exam. And without the notes, and hopefully it'll drive stuff. It just gets you thinking, which is important. So just going through the modules, what would I look at? I think early doors, there is an area on new account application forms, isn't there? Although I think there's only one. Is there a trade one in here, or is it all just consumer? That's consumer stuff. Collections module 2. The other thing, very few people sent me back, just I'm flicking through this, the listening skills.
I don't know. I
sent you my back. I thought that was worth much.
Well, I hope it was worth it to you.
Yeah, I learned an awful lot from it, yeah, but I was so surprised. It was revelation.
So, it's in module 2. It's in module 2. So page 29 in module 2, and I gave you a link to a listening skills exercise. Now, look, it's a distraction for now, so forget it. The next 2 weeks, just do the exam. But even afterwards, if you want to have a look at it and do it, I think to me, it's a huge learning curve, because we think we're good at this thing and we're brutal at it. And that just proves it.
Really brutal.
Yeah. And anybody who did that exercise, it's great. So let's start. I'm just going through the notes. Yeah, application forms. Account application forms. I think they are covered, aren't they, in module 1. Now, I know I have a consumer one. It's not trade, no. So the trade must be part of the credit management. Must be part of the... On the credit management course, we're going to get more into the credit management area in terms of policies and procedures and all that good stuff. Are you with me? And application forms and right first time and all that kinds of stuff. So on that... I let slip earlier as well, just in terms of module 1 that I'm going to show it. The power bases of a collector. The 4 power bases. Yeah? Your reward power and what's the other power? Anybody know them?
Knowledge power.
Yeah, go on. Relationship power. Yeah, and?
Legitimacy.
So I would definitely, if... read over that section very carefully. Is that okay? So that's there as well. And I think in terms of the power bases, knowing your power base, and just knowing you're right, it gives you confidence. So that's the thing about you know, not going into this half-cocked. Make sure you have your information, make sure your information is up to date, and then once I know what I want to achieve from the call, then it just makes it easy. And see everything else as a distraction. So if you're annoyed, angry, using bad language or whatever the hell, that's just background noise as far as I'm concerned. You owe £1,500, you have to pay it. You know, end of. And, you know, this is where, and I'm going to sort of maybe focus on it in new modules, just asking questions. Asking questions gets you out of so much trouble. You know, and no matter how angry they are, you know, did you get an invoice for 1500? You know, this is my great, stupid question way. Because you got it. I know you got it. So the only way you can answer that question is yes. And do you owe it? Yeah. Now you've admitted you owe it. So now you have to pay it. Yeah? So how would you like to pay? See, you just bring them through questions to where you want them to go. Are you with me? Rather than saying, oh, you got that for, you know, what's going on there? We're waiting 3 months now for that payment. Leave a rev. So let's not do revs. And I found in my whole life, but knowing your power base, your legitimacy power, your knowledge power, your reward power, and your relationship power, and it's one of the big things that you have in your favour if you know how to use it. So that's grand. The next thing now, in terms of, and look, I did, a few of you wrote in the review of the material of the personality types. It went into a lot of, did you do your own personality types?
I loved that when I did.
Isn't that just great?
Yeah, I loved it.
And just knowing, you know, that you're an ENTJ or whatever the case may be, it just sets you up for life. And then you can see other people that you know, look, they're an E, what else do you expect from them, you know? And, yeah, that's just the way they are. And you can just make allowances. We did it as part of a management team in a company I worked in many, many years ago. And, you know, to our absolute amazement, we found that we were all exactly the same personality type. Can you imagine 5 people like me on a management team, you know, havoc. And we wondered why it wasn't working, because like, we're all pretty good at what we did. And how we found out was that we were all great at starting stuff, and there wasn't one of us capable of finishing anything. Not even a sentence. So we'd get bored halfway through, you know, take on these great projects. And it was just a greatest eye-opener. So then we decided, from a recruitment perspective, we had to recruit somebody who was the opposite to us. And the poor guy thought he landed on Mars when he came into this boardroom. But we got another one in, and two of them were friends, and we just didn't have points with them. But they were great, because they finished what we started, and they wouldn't start stuff, and we did. So the personality types. So yes, but there is going to be questions on that, in terms of, now we're not going to get into all your EN, you don't have to learn off INGT or whatever, so there's none of that. In fact, the one area that I would focus on more than the personality types is on the processing styles. Remember the visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and digital?
The communications,
yeah.
I liked that part.
So, and if you can tune yourself into it, it is eye-opening. You know, so if you listen to the words people use, and some of the games I play just to keep myself amused is when you meet somebody for the first time, and this is how you practice it, say, I wonder, can I work out what type of person they are? And just ask them a couple of questions, and when you're actually listening for visual clues or auditory clues or whatever, it's so clear. It's absolutely fantastic. So in terms of you know, building rapport with these kinds of people, that if you're an auditory person and I'm saying, you look, can you not see it there in front of you? No is the answer. You know, whereas if I know you're auditory, then you know, well, you know, can you listen to what I have to say for a minute? Now you'll resonate. And it's just by knowing what type of person you're dealing with. And it's okay for you guys from a credit control perspective, it's a nice if. From a management perspective, I would kill a manager who did not know the style of every single one of their staff. I would kill a manager, because it's a manager's job to know their staff and to communicate with their staff in the way that they want to be communicated with. You see, I think there's one, did you ever hear the golden rule? It's the one common denominator between every religion on the planet. There is one thing that they all share in common. And just to alienate myself from everybody, I don't agree with it. And the one thing that is common in every religion known to man is this. There's a line that says something along the lines of, treat other people the way you'd like to be treated yourself. Everybody's heard that, yeah? I don't agree with it. And I'll tell you why. Because you are making a fatal assumption that everybody else is like you. And they're not. So what I think is a much better rule, so we rewrite every religion on the planet, and this is the line that we'll install instead. Treat others the way they'd like to be treated. Not the way I'd like to be treated, the way they'd like to be treated. So recognize, so if you're visual, I'll talk to you in visual terms. If you're auditory, I'll talk to you in auditory. If you're digital, I'll give you the facts and none of the bull to go with it. And I think if we treat people the way they'd like to be treated, we're going to get far better results. So anyway, that's that. So yes, to building rapport with the communication styles, that is another way that we're going to do it. So, but learning off ENTJs, you know, that's not going to be there. But it's something. And there was online personality tests. Did you have a go at those yourself? And it's very interesting. And if you have a team of people, get them to do it. You know, you have done it, have you? And I know you can pay Myers-Briggs like 20 grand to come in and analyse your team or whatever. And I'm not, you know, annoyed because they charge more than I do. The four questions on that test are the best four I've ever come across. You know, there's a 200 questionnaire that costs you 500 quid or something. That's free, four questions, and it's 100% right. And the other thing, just going on to personality types, and then I'll leave it there for that. One thing, I'm not sure whether I put the advice in here or not. Google your four letters.
I printed it in.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. That's me. That is.
Yeah.
So just Google. So if you do the test and say I'm a INTJ or whatever, Google INTJ and you'll find holidays, careers, you know, everything, all based on your personality type. It is universal language and it's so accurate, it's scary. But I think the two things in tandem in terms of the personality types on one side and then people's processing styles on the other, if you know those two, you know how to communicate with people. And to me, credit management collections is all about communications. So it's what I say, it's what you hear, it's the tone, and everything in credit, it's the results. So if I ring you and I upset you, I have not done my job. If I have rang you and I get paid, I have done my job. So always remember that. That's the focus. That is what you're on about as well. Okay, so that's that. What else then? Let's see. Letters. Well, letters came up in the mock, so you don't have to worry about letters in the... whatever, so that's that. Here's module 3 now as well. I told you in terms of can't pay, won't pay, and shouldn't pay. I'm kind of, just to give you an insight as well, I'm moving away from that model in my own head at the moment, in terms of can't pay and won't pay. And just to give you a sneak preview into future editions, what the module in my head is changing to is ability to pay and willingness to pay. Isn't that what it's all about? I know I've put up an argument and maybe it'll come up in the exam, so in terms of can't pay. When you think about it for a minute, everybody can pay. Can't they? When somebody says to me, I'd love to do that, but I don't have time. I go mad. Because every one of us has 168 hours in the week. So you have exactly the same amount of time as I have. So telling me you don't have time to do this is rubbish. Because you have, and you had 168 hours last week, 168 hours this week. So have we time? Yes, we have. What you're telling me is, it's not on my priority list. It's not important enough for me to do it. Do you understand? So telling me I don't have time, we're not watching me. Yes, you have time, and if it's important enough, you do it. Obviously, so it's not a matter of I don't have time, it's not high enough on my priority list. And the same way in terms of can't pay. Can you pay? Yeah, you can. Do you have money? Yes, you do. It's just not on your priority list. Yeah? You'd prefer to go on holidays now than pay me. Yeah, because you're human. Anyway, for the purpose of the exam, and I'm just doing that, I would certainly look at the can't, or maybe even shouldn't, as the two reasons. Shouldn't pay is probably it's the biggest reason. People, you know, I go in consulting, you know, your desk ledger is a mess. And you go, yeah, and you just dig two layers down. Oh, your invoice is going out wrong. It's going to the wrong place. You're not sending out in time. You're, you know, wrong prices, wrong deliveries. And, you know, you're sitting there thinking, oh, am I the only one going mad? And you're not. Every company, and I wrote as well, the bigger the companies, the worse they are. Bigger the companies, the worse they are. Well, you're probably an exception. Yeah. I'd say that sending out wrong invoices would just, and it just happens. And I would say most of the reasons why we have, aging balances in our ledgers is because we've done something wrong. So the shouldn't pay, and that's something that you should just eliminate within your businesses. I am not putting up. We won't put up with shoddy products. Why do we put up with shoddy invoices? So getting people on board. So anyway, just have a look at that as well. The other area, and I have mentioned this already, actually, the whole data protection legislation. Now again, you know, you probably know more than I do. The data protection is the data protection in the notes. Now, do you all know about GDPR? GDPR. Have you heard of GDPR? Yeah, that's my worst fears realised. Yes. Yeah, it's a whole new data protection legislation that's coming in March 18. Have you had any sessions in work about it or anything?
No, I'm going to the course next month.
Are you? Yeah, it's something that I'll do. Now, it'll be September, October time. I'll give you a shout when I do it, but I'm thinking of getting in an expert. So it's going to have huge implications for credit people in terms of the information that you can store on people, the information, how you share information, and what the EU government has, or the EU legislature has done, which I think is pretty good, to focus people's minds. They have increased the fine for data protection breaches to 20 million.
In regards to trade references.
Ha! That's exactly what we're talking about here. Yeah. So there will be changes. But look, between now and then, I will let you know. I say it's something that I have on my mind, and I have a call out now for an expert to do it. So, but look, for the purpose of the exam, it's data protection as in the notes. Is that okay? One thing that we're proud of, actually, it's the only time we've ever been ahead of the UK. We introduced the legislation in Ireland in 1988, and the UK brought it in 1998, so we're 10 years ahead of the UK on data protection, which is brilliant. Now, having said that, and just from a day-to-day perspective, guys, there's been very few prosecutions. And I know people are paranoid about data protection, and rightly so. There's been very few. I think there have been two prosecutions. And Bank of Ireland lose laptops with 10,000 people's addresses on it, and they get a slap on the wrist and say, don't do that. Yeah,
what's
maybe
the point
a bit
of it then?
What?
What's the point in having it then?
Ah, because, well now the new provisions with a 20, I think it's 20 million fine or 4% of your turnover, whichever's the highest. So if Apple or one of those people were found in breach, it could run into hundreds of millions. So look, we keep you informed about that. But look, data protection is going to be a huge area. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Trade references. You know, you have to be careful. Although that was covered a bit in the law as well, wasn't it, in terms of tort law and all that kind of stuff as well. That's that. How many questions have you got now?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Only four?
Yeah, four.
I have four.
I should have five. Four. Yeah, that's grand. Four. That's grand. So now, what are the other four? What areas would I look at? Yeah, back to chapter one again. And I know maybe it's outside the role of collections and all that kind of stuff, and maybe it's more consumer than trade, which is alien to most of you. But one thing that I think is so important for everything, do you remember the concept of matching? If not, read it again, it's in chapter one. It's the one area that I would highly recommend, both from a business perspective, a credit perspective, and a personal perspective, that we take this concept of matching very seriously. And just to give you a revision in a nutshell, to put it into words rather than words on a page, here is the thing. Any business, and I've been a credit manager for years, any business that has ever run into financial trouble that I have been dealing with is because they did not follow the rule of matching. So, for example, what matching says is that if you want to buy a car, the first question you ask is, how long am I going to keep the car for? Yeah? So if I'm going to get a brand new car that I'm going to keep for 5 years, then finance it over 5 years. Why take all the money out of your bank now and be stuck? Are you with me? So if it's going to last me 5 years, pay for it over 5 years. If I get a second-hand car that's only going to last 3 years, pay for it over 3 years. If I'm going to buy a house, you know, the house will still be there in 30 years' time, and most of you will be, but anyway. So if I'm going to be around 30 years' time and the house is going to be around 30 years, pay for it over 30 years. If you try to pay for a house over 5 years, you would starve to death sometime within the...
Huh? Not all of us.
Not all of us, no, well, that's true. So, most people would, yeah, because it'd be too much of a drain out of your cash. So you have to leave cash for spending and cash for debt repayments. And if we learn to match, but what I found is, and I was only with a company there last month, they were experiencing cash flow difficulties and all that kind of stuff. And the first thing I said to them, oh, the van. Bought a brand new van, 23 grand or something for a van. Oh, I paid cash for it. Pay cash for it, and you have cash flow problems. You know, like you're adding to your cash flow problems, and if they just follow the rule of matching. Now, it works in reverse as well, because back in the day when the boom was happening, one thing that used to make my blood boil was, I can't remember her name, she was an English actress or something, coming on telling you, oh, get your mortgage and your credit cards and your car loans and roll them all up into one easy payment. Your Stark mortgage is one of these people. So now you're paying for your car for the next 20 years. You know, and that's a recipe for disaster, because if you don't match the length of the life of the asset to the payment term. So in terms of being afraid to borrow, never be afraid to borrow. You know, if you want a car, you want a house, you want a fridge, pay for it. And if your money's coming in weekly, pay for it weekly. If your money's coming in monthly, pay for it monthly. It becomes an expense rather than a big capital item. And look, in terms of the old-fashioned thing of saving up and buying it, that's okay too. But people overstretch themselves or understretch themselves, let's not do that. But the concept of matching is something that is close to my heart and probably will make an appearance somewhere on the exam, which is what you're interested in. So to understand the concept, is that okay? Mm-hmm. So that's that. One of the other things examiners love as well It's where there's lists, because lists are great, because it just makes the job of marking so much easier. And there was a section on face-to-face meetings, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And if I remember rightly, there was 10 rules of face-to-face meetings. If I wanted to relax and do well the exam, I would probably have revisit that and know what they are. So I think that'd be important. And again, there could be 1,000 rules for face-to-face meetings. The 10 that we'd be looking for, the 10 that are in the notes, be they right or wrong, or whatever. So it's something, as credit controllers, I wouldn't shy away from the whole area of face-to-face meetings. It's great to get to meet customers. If you don't, you should. It changes the whole, particularly key customers or problem customers or high-risk customers or where there's a million queries on an account or whatever. You know, just by getting out and saying, how are you?
I agree on that, but the problem is the turnover sometimes in staff is just ridiculous.
In
the AP departments.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Billing relationships are different. Of course, they might be this fast.
Yeah, well, in my role as credit manager, my relationship would have been at management level. You know, in terms of, yeah, look, on a collector level, yeah, you're talking to maybe an accountant or whatever, but I would always sort of get to talk to the... And the person at the top, you know, they're much easier to deal with as well, you know. And you find as well that when it comes to dealing with issues, the higher up in an organisation you go, the softer they get. Isn't that true? They get softer as they go up. So somebody at the ground will say, no, you're on stock, you didn't pay. Then it goes to the manager, and half the time they say, yes, they're on stock. The other half say, ah, but sure, let it go, I know him. And if it goes to the FD, you know, he lets recourse them go, at the end, he'll let everybody go. So, you know, as it sort of goes up the organisation, they get softer as they go. So if I'm looking for something, I will always see how high up the organisation I can go, because that's where I get the results. And rather than sitting down and writing 750 credit notes, you say, look, hold on, we did, we messed up, we forgot that promotion. Look, if I give you one credit note now for 30 grand, will you put that up? You know, that sort of a conversation, rather than doing a whole heap of work. So at a clerical level, you know, we can have bundles of work, whereas at a management level, I can go in and say, look, you know what, okay, there's 500 invoices there, they're all wrong, so you want to, so how much credit do you get? 16,000, and I know, yeah, I've 18 grand in my head, so 16, I'm getting off light. Okay, well, look, I'll tell you what I'll do. If I give you one credit note for 16 grand, will you pop them through for payment? You know, and can you see the amount of work that's saved? You can only do that at a management level, you can't do it at a clerical level. So if you have loads of problems, the higher up the organisation you go, the less of the mundane work, because they just care about the top line. So it's about that. So face-to-face meetings is something that I would definitely encourage. And if you have an account with a million old balances and queries and all that kind of stuff, you know, rather than talking to your AP person or the fourth AP person that year, and you're starting all over again because she's left and you're going, here, get in at management level. The most successful meetings I ever had in query resolution was where I got my AP counterpart say, okay, here's the deal, right? You have invoices there that you're saying this price query's on. I'm saying the price is right, you're saying the price is wrong. Yeah, here's the deal. Can you give us half an hour? Oh, that's for half an hour, you take an hour. They know that too. Half an hour of your time, could you get the purchasing manager in the room with you? And I'll bring the sales guy with me. And the four of us sit down in the room. Yeah? So now we have this pile of queries, but the queries are in categories. So you just pick up one category and say, yeah, well, look, here's the first one. We invoiced you for €74 and you're saying it should be 64. And you just drop it on the table between the two powers. So here's the deal. If 74 is right, you pay it. And 64 is right, then you sign it off and I'll put you the credit note. So either way, we either put it on one side or the other, either goes through flame or comes back for prep. And just pop it between the two of them and sit back and say nothing. And every single one is resolved there and then. And then, so it's just, I've had a number of meetings like that. So meeting people, but on the face-to-face meetings, I think in the notes, if I remember rightly, it's more about collections, isn't it? So you have a customer coming in who owes you money or whatever the case may be. So just go through the rules in terms of the setup and all that kind of good stuff as well. So just be conscious of it, because I think that is important too. What else can I tell you as well? Yes, insolvency. So that's covered slightly now. It's covered more in the next course. The types of insolvency. Now, just some people get confused between insolvency and liquidations. So there's a number of types of liquidations, but insolvency, the three main things in insolvency were liquidations, receivers, and examiners. And again, rather than asking people what they don't know.
That's coming up in the law as well.
Is it?
Yeah.
But you see, it is. It's kind of key.
Yeah.
It's kind of key to... now, I know it's handled at a much lighter level. So if the detail in the answer for law is different than...
Yeah.
Like, this is more of a kind of a top-line kind of subject. So yeah, you're not citing cases or whatever. So just from a collections perspective, it's just an overall understanding. So to give you an overall understanding, the liquidator winds it up. Once the liquidation is the death of the company, it's dead. So the liquidator wraps it up, closes it down, walks away. The receiver is there to receive the asset that they've been sent in. So if the banker owed 10 grand and they sent in a receiver, the receiver's job is just to get the 10 grand. That's all they do. And they will do whatever it takes to get, well, from 10 grand to 10 million. But whatever it is, just receive whatever they're sent in to do and do whatever they can to get it. Is that okay? So some people confuse liquidations and receiverships. The liquidations are technically, the company can continue to trade after the receivership, and lots of companies do. Lots of don't as well. So you have to. And the other thing, sorry, and I don't think it comes up in either collections or law. A lot of people see charges on assets as something that the banks do. There is nothing stopping you doing it. As credit managers, I did it in a number of companies as well, where I was worried about the risk of the business. So what I would do is I would say, right, well, we need some kind of security, and you don't have it, and the accounts look like rubbish, and you want $500,000. So I would find something worth $500,000 within the business that I could take a charge on. So then I knew that if the company went into liquidation, I'd be top, because you'd cover the queue in law, didn't you, in terms of who gets what. Mm-hmm. So as a secured creditor, I'm top of the list. Thank you very much. So you can do it. So rather than saying no to a high-risk customer who's high value, if you can get a charge on an asset, take it. And I've been very, very successful in that. But from a collections perspective, just to know the difference, the examinership is different. Their job, as you know, is just to get a scheme of arrangement with the creditors. So for an examinership to work, the business must be capable of survival. So they have a huge mountain of debt they can't service. But if we could just magically get rid of the debt, then the company could trade and pay wages and keep going. And if that's the case, the examiner comes in, scheme of arrangements, wipes out the debt or 90% of it or whatever it is, and then the company continues to trade. All right. From a practical perspective, Now, what most companies are using examinerships for is to get their rents reduced. There's no provision in Irish law to reduce rents. But if an examiner goes in, then they can negotiate a rent reduction. Yeah. The most famous case, because I know they're advertising on the telly or on the radio recently, Pamela Scott's. I'm sure you're all rushing there to their flash sale that I heard on the radio. They appointed an examiner and got their rents halved in most of their high street stores, and they're still trading away profitably. So that's that. So just to know who those three guys are and know the difference between the three of them. Is that okay? So that is important. So yeah, so liquidation, receiver and examiner and all that kind of stuff. That is that. What else now do we know about as well? Module 4. So yeah, so collection through the courts. No, I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah, there's the corporate insolvency section. I would definitely look over that. In terms of, yeah, on the data protection, I don't want you to learn, because I put in again just for your benefit, some numbers and fees and application fees. That won't be examined, so you don't have to go learning off, you know, what the application fees, it's general concepts, is that okay? So we don't get into the minutiae of it as well. So that's that, so that's commitment on the call. Let me see what else. Yeah, dark side. Roleplay, that's your stuff there. That's fair enough. Yeah, so building rapport via that is fine. Let me see what else. No, you know what? I'm actually, because I can change my mind. It's in my prerogative. I'm going to retract something I said earlier, so anybody who's listening to sleep now and stopped halfway through, we'll get in for a surprise. yeah, serves them right. I said to you about letters. I think, on second thoughts, I would have a look at that area. Now, when I talk about letters, like letters, emails, like it's written communications with people, the rules around written communications. And look, emails are the same as letters as far as I am concerned. It's not text speak, it's not how you, you know, it has to be professional and it has to be, and there is a structure that we went through, and that structure works a treat. So, you know, by all means, what? I've changed my mind. That's the one I changed my mind on. So applications are gone. Okay. Because when I check the notes, there's only a consumer, and most people here aren't involved in consumer. So why would you bother learning stuff that you don't need to learn? So those
letters that you said that you have, will you send them on?
I will send ahead.
Oh, all right then. Now, look, and I give you a word of warning, Linda, as well on these. This is not a template. This is not something that you rob and copy. Now, you're free to rob and copy it if you want. It's just to give you a structure and a format. Are you with me? So I will send you sample letters. So I've given you the formula for writing letters, haven't I? So let me just see now. Let me see. Yeah. So, okay, to stay constant, that I said if it's on the mock, it won't be on the exam, so I've got to stay consistent to that. So, rather than writing a letter that you have to do in the mock exam, it's the structure of the letter will be the area I would look at. And the key areas to me are, you know, No, I, me, we, and our. I, me, we, and our. Those words never appear on a letter, ever. Right? Your paragraphs, your consequences, you know, all that kind of good stuff.
I, me, we,
or our. They are four words. And every collection letter I see are full of those four words. I am writing to you because our terms are 15% and we are disappointed that you ignored my last letter. Like, God, what a load of rubbish. You know, well, your terms are, but I haven't paid you and I'm still alive. You know, you are disappointed. Yeah, like, I give tuppence how you feel. You know, why are you telling me how your emotional state right now? Like, when you look at it logically, you know, oh my God. And then the thing that drives me mad. And I check your letters. I look at you, and just your embarrassed faces alone will be valid. Will admit to this. Are you ready? Don't hesitate to contact me.
Yeah.
You go, oh my God! You know, talking about breaking everyone. If you put "don't hesitate to contact me" at the end of your letter, you will fail. Is that all right? It doesn't matter what you do. I know that's it. Don't hesitate to contact me. Like, why do we talk like that? Please contact me. Yeah, like, you know, and I spent a good bit at the start of the book, and in fact it was one of the questions that on the short tests that we probably had more wrong answers than any other, which really really disappointed me, and was the worst word in the world ever. It's don't is the worst word. And again, if you've forgotten why and you're still using don't, go back and read that chapter. To me, that is one of the most important life lessons, never mind collections, credit control or anything else. Life lessons. That what we have to do, if we want to be successful in anything, is very, very simply, we focus on what we want. We focus on what we want. What most people do is, they focus on what they don't want. And questions like, don't hesitate to contact me, you're telling them what you don't want. So they'll do what you don't want them to do, because they have to. Do you understand? So if you say to a three-year-old child standing at the corner of a table, don't jump off the table, what happens next? Of course, there's nothing else they can do. And there's mammies here in the room, which I'll give out to as well. Mammies, the first word out of every mother's mouth to their child is don't.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Why focus on what you don't want them to do? Because you get what you focus on. So remember that statement. It's not in the exam, but I want you to take this away. And if you took nothing else away from the course, only that one question, which is, so what do I want? So what do I want? And you apply that not only to collections when you pick up the phone, so what do I want from the call? I have a meeting, so what do I want from this meeting? Somebody rings me. I'm getting good now. If somebody rings me, yeah, and I pick up the phone and go, hello, and they go, hi, Declan, it's John here. And I go, John, can you just hang on a second? Right? I would put the phone down. I think, okay, well, John's not ringing to the inquiry about my health, is he? Because John doesn't care about me the same as everybody else. So John is obviously looking for me to do something, isn't he? So I take that minute. Because he's got me by surprise. Oh, John, can you hang on a sec? What can I get John to do for me? Oh, yeah, he knows so-and-so. Okay, sorry, John. Yeah, I was distracted there. Go ahead. What can I do for you? And he'll say, can you do that for me? Yeah, absolutely. And while I'm doing that, can you? So I will always have to decide what I want. And same with staff. You know, they used to drive them mad. But any staff member who came into my office with a problem... left with a problem. I'm an equal opportunity supplier, you know. You're not dumping all your monkeys on my desk, thank you very much. I've enough for my own. Do you get that? No, please, it's not in the exam, and maybe it should be question one on the exam, just to reiterate the point with you. But focusing on what you want is the secret of success in everything. And if you find yourself worrying, or even if you find yourself in bad humour for 10 minutes, I guarantee you, if you're in bad humour for 10 minutes, it's because you're focusing on something you don't want.
What if you don't know what you want?
That's okay too. Most people don't. Most people don't. Yeah, that's another class altogether, isn't it? So what do I want? I know we're here to discuss exams and whatever. Here, I'll tell you what. Will I give you a trick?
Give you a trick. I did see markers here.
Right, okay. Now, I'll finish with the exam, so I'll finish with this. Is that okay? Because they're not here.